Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
This is episode 375. Welcome back to the show, and we are running right into that Christmas holiday, or Diwali. Hanukkah started a few days back, and there are countless holidays that are coming through, whether you celebrate the solstices or what have you. I guess in a way we all kind of celebrate the solstice, but it's going to be a great holiday season. I just know it. Now, just some news and some updates. First and foremost, I want to let everybody know that, of course, we are going to be dark. That is, no episode for the next 2 weeks. That is because I have to spend some time with the kids and the family, as we want to do, as we need to do, and just take time to reflect and live life as we do with our families at this time of the year. That doesn't mean I'm not going to be working on the show for the next 2 weeks. It just means we won't have an episode ready for the next 2 weeks. So the next episode you're going to hear is going to be on the 6th of January, and it's going to be a great episode. I've actually got my first guest for 2019 lined up. Who's it going to be? It's going to be Brother Lance Kennedy. That's right. You know him. You know his writing from Phoenix Masonry and Masonic Information. It's been blogged, reblogged. It's gone viral. It's really good information. We're going to be talking about a multitude of different topics, but I think our focus is really going to be on Masonry in the next 20 years. Where are we going to be? What are we going to look like? What's it going to feel like? How are we going to get there? What's the cost of getting there? And I think we are going to have a wonderful conversation. I invite you all to listen in to that episode. And I don't usually go around sharing the episodes in different forums and what have you, but you bet your bottom dollar I'm going to share that episode in the old Texas Freemasonry Facebook group, because outside of the Winding Stairs, those are the two groups that have the most discussion, the most educated conversations that I've seen while staying on the level. It's pretty amazing. Everybody is usually very relaxed and respectful of each other. It's pretty cool. So I'll be sharing it there, but keep a lookout. We'll be, of course, on iTunes and everywhere podcasts are heard. This week, I've got a couple pieces for you, and these two pieces seem to jump out, as it were, recently as I was going through some old paperwork. The first piece that I'm going to read is from the Illinois Lodge of Research, and it's from Volume 21, and it's called What Does Masonry Mean? And it's by a good friend of mine, Brother Ira Gilbert, who's a past master and, of course, a past district deputy grandmaster. The man has written volumes on Freemasonry, but this is just one of his shorter articles that I just loved. In fact, I think after I read it, I audibly said something like, "Shots fired," and laughed to myself, but I hope you guys enjoy that one. And the other one we're going to read is actually an excerpt reading from The Pharos, which is the Silas H. Shepherd Lodge of Research, FNAM of Wisconsin. It's number 1843. These guys put out a wonderful book every year, and I think they have 6 or 7 volumes. I was gifted a complete set, and I've been reading through them, and there is some phenomenal work in these books. So if you are interested in these books, let me know. I will send you some links to where you can pick them up. I think they're on Lulu, but wonderful books, and I want to do a reading from one of them that I think you'll all enjoy. And if I've got some extra time, because of course we have illustrious Brother Stephen L. Harrison on this week as well, but if we have some extra time, I'll do a short reading of a recent Midnight Freemason article, which was written by Brother Scott S. Duball, the brother I talk to the most, almost every day on the phone. He also had a little bit to say about the hot topic of Freemasonry dying. But if we don't get to that, rest assured, you can go find that right online at www.themidnightfreemasons.org. But we'll get into those right after this. The Whence Came You podcast is brought to you through the generous support of Masonic Revival, contemporary Masonic designs made for today's Freemason. You don't have to settle for throwing a plain old square and compass on anything anymore. Now you get something truly designed and truly wonderful. Whether it's aprons, awesome pins, and wonderful neckwear, bow ties, ties, pocket squares, you name it, Masonic Revival has it. Head on over to MasonicRevival.com and check out what they have to offer. If you use promo code WCY at checkout, that means free shipping also. And make sure if you see Brother Edgar, tell him thanks for helping bring this program to all of you. And this program is also brought to you by all of you, those of you who support this program. We can't do it without you and your donations and all of your assistance, so thank you so much. To find out more about how you can assist this program, head on over to WCYpodcast.com and click on Support the Show. There you can make direct donations, sign up to be a monthly contributor, a fellow, or even a producer. And thanks very much to everybody for donating.
Special announcement! Special announcement!
Hi everyone, this is Brother Joe Martinez from Manassas Lodge No. 182 in Manassas, Virginia. I first wanted to thank Brother Robert and the Whence Came You podcast for allowing me a few seconds to announce a very special event. On June 15th, 2019, we will be hosting the first ever Mid-Atlantic Esotericon in Manassas, Virginia, and tickets go on sale today. This will be a jam-packed event full of esoteric presentations from many of your favorite speakers, to include John Ruark, Frater O, Greg Kaminsky, P.D. Newman, Pierce Vaughn, Jamie Lamb, Don McAndrews, and your very own Robert Johnson. In attendance will be some of your favorite vendors and authors, which we will soon announce, and the event will include presentations for both the Master Mason, as well as those that are interested in learning more about Freemasonry and the more philosophical aspects of the craft. We will be kicking off that weekend's festivities with a social event at Sinistral Brewing Company in Old Town Manassas on the evening of June 14th. Tickets for the social event are very limited, and it will be a private event in a great venue with much fellowship to be had. If you're looking for an engaging, thought-provoking, and esoterically focused event, you will not want to miss this. Please check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/MAEsotericon for ticket links, further information, and news updates as we post them. Again, a most hearty thank you to my dear friend and brother, Robert Johnson, for allowing us a few brief minutes to tell you all about this amazing event, which we are all excited to host. Seating is limited, so get your tickets now. And as one of our co-hosts, Brother John, always says, keep searching for more light. You'll be sure to find some in Northern Virginia in June of next year.
Saturday, June 15th, 2019. Your path to apotheosis starts at the Mid-Atlantic Esotericon. Get your tickets. We'll see you in the Playroma.
In all seriousness, I hope you guys do come out to check out the Mid-Atlantic Esotericon happening in 2019. It's going to be a fantastic event, as you heard Brother Joe mention. I'm really excited about it, and I hope you are too. Well, before I get into this one, I just want you to know that if you hear a bunch of this, well, that's because I'm reading it from an actual sheet of paper, and I will do my best to scan this in so that you guys have a copy of it as the bonus feature in the app. I cannot do that with the other because it is a printed book, and I don't know if that would be kosher legally. But anyway, here we go. What Does Masonry Mean? By Ira Gilbert, past master, past district deputy grandmaster. Recently, a newly initiated entered apprentice reported that he did not wish to continue in the degrees and wanted to be released from his obligations to the fraternity. The reason for his dissatisfaction was that he had the thought that becoming a Mason would give him access to members whom he might solicit as customers for his business. This is typical of the mistaken opinion of many potential candidates for the degrees. Dennis Chorneski of the Masonic Restoration Foundation was quoted as saying, "Much of our dilemma arises from the fact that too many men who join are not properly educated about the fraternity. Rather than coming to an understanding of the craft based on diligent study and thinking, new candidates tend to form their opinions based on the behavior of fellow Masons who are themselves poorly educated about the fraternity's history and philosophy. Some of the questions that arise in the new candidates can be answered during the investigation process before the petition is received. The Intender program has a pamphlet entitled On the Threshold, which will answer many of these questions. The pamphlet should be given to the potential candidate by the investigating committee." I'm going to break into the paper here and just let you all know that if you don't know what the Intender program is, it's basically a series of booklets that are given to the candidate before and after each degree. Back to the paper. The noted Masonic researcher and author Albert Galatian Mackey dealt with this issue in his book entitled Masonry Defined: A Liberal Masonic Education. In the introduction of the book, the question is stated thus, quote, "The average Mason, after taking his degrees in Masonry, immediately asks himself what it all means." End quote. Mackey is of the opinion that only a few Masons have or will take the time to make an exhaustive study of Masonry. In his book, The Lodge and the Craft, The author Rollin C. Blackmer reports that at the time the book was written, there were more than 100,000 brethren in the state of Missouri. Of these, Blackmer states that there were only 75 of this number who had taken the time to make a study of the history, philosophy, and symbolism of the fraternity, so as to awaken within themselves the desire to learn what it really takes to be a Mason. It is to the new brother who goes into the brotherhood in the belief, quote, that there is really something to it, end quote, that a desire to be well informed is kindled. This article is not meant to make the new brother a Masonic scholar. Indeed, there are a relative few who take the time to become really informed about the fraternity. There are literally thousands of books published about Freemasonry. Mackey states that no Mason can acquire in a few days or months all there is to know about Masonry. Indeed, two of the most notable of Masonic scholars, Albert Galician Mackey himself and General Albert Pike, spent their entire lives in the study of Freemasonry. In today's society, where the demands of earning a living and supporting their families, it is the most difficult for our brethren to find the time to spend in such Masonic endeavors. In our own state of Illinois, the Grand Lodge Directory lists 29 brothers as the Grand Lodge instructors. These worthy brethren are also certified as Grand Lecturers. 96 brethren are certified by our Grand Lodge as Grand Lecturers, and an additional 4 of our members are certified lecturers, awaiting only to rise to the east in their lodges to gain Grand Lecturer status. These foregoing brethren have demonstrated their ability to be proficient in the ritual and floor work of all the degrees. In addition, 100 brethren are certified by our Grand Lodge as Lodge Instructors, proficient in the ritual work of the first section of all 3 degrees, opening and closing of the Lodge, and the reception of the District Deputy Grand Master. These Masons spent countless hours in memorization of the ritual and floor work so that they can pass a strict examination by our Board of Grand Examiners. The question that must be asked of these praiseworthy brethren is, quote, given that you are proficient in memorization, how familiar are you in the meaning of the words that you have labored so long to learn? End quote. What do you know of the history of our brotherhood? What do you know of the philosophy of our brotherhood? In other words, why are you a Mason? Mackey's book states that these brethren who are so proficient in the ritual but are not knowledgeable in the meaning of the words is like having a child learn his ABCs and calling him a scholar. Learning the ritual and floor work is like the rough ashlar. It is a building block that needs to be finished into the perfect ashlar that makes the building blocks of our Masonic house. Mackey states that, quote, Masonry would die out in 5 years if it had to depend on about 85% of the membership, end quote. He goes on to state that it is only a small minority of really interested Masons that have enabled our fraternity to last almost 300 years. It is this small minority of our members that aspire to a place in the line of officers. It is this small minority of our members that are willing to spend the time necessary to keep Freemasonry alive. Our lodges would cease to exist if all its members simply paid their dues and rarely, if ever, attended a meeting of his lodge. Ask yourself, what do you want from Freemasonry if you are only a member? How many of you are proud to say, oh yes, I am a Mason, but I haven't attended lodge in years? Mackey asks, what benefit does Masonry give to this man? What benefit does this brother get from his membership in our brotherhood? If this brother had taken the time to learn something of Freemasonry, he would have become more than just a Mason in name only. There is much to our fraternity. Being a Mason is truly a fine experience. Learning, for example, the meaning of the legend of the third degree will add significantly to the life experience of being a man and a Mason. I am not suggesting that every brother become a Masonic scholar. I am only stating that taking the time to learn something of history, philosophy, and symbolism of our degrees will add to the desire to attend lodge and get something out of the ritual. Become more than a Mason in name only. Remember the admonition given by H. L. Hayward, quote, not more men in Masonry, but more Masonry in men, end quote. Well, there you have that piece. You know, a lot of concepts within that are so familiar to us, and I think they are so relevant today. Just because they're always relevant. This is the nature of this fraternity. When Mackey says that if we had to rely on 85% of our fraternity, that our fraternity would cease to exist in the next 5 years. If we really think about that, how true would that be? If the 15% that offsets it stepped back and we relied on the other 85%, mama bird, are we kicking them out and see if they can fly? And then we expect them to fly, but there's no inherent need for success, right? So the cat scoops them up and eats them. They don't get to fly away. It's just interesting to think about. But a wonderful piece, and it was written quite a few years ago, actually, that comes from the Transaction of the Illinois Lodge of Research, again, Volume 21, the year 2012.
I found a metal file box while I was rummaging through a closet recently. When I opened it, I discovered a treasure trove of things my parents had saved. Among the items were World War II ration books. I'm certain they belonged to my mother because, at the time, my father was slogging his way across North Africa, up through Italy, and into France. You've seen the maps. My parents, Robert and Alice, were part of that industrious, young, and determined group that really did save the world. And for good reason, we now call them the greatest generation. People of that era made sacrifices unimaginable to most of us now living in what Time magazine has dubbed the me, me, me generation, not to be outdone by the me generation of the 70s. I'm not sure what all of Mom's coupons were for, but I know for sure the U.S. rationed gas, food, and other items. People were encouraged to recycle tin cans for the war effort. Children even donated their metal toys to help. Each family was allocated 5 tires for 1 family car and had to give any others to the government. Even the fact that we are at war today does not affect us like that. Most of us, apart from families with loved ones in the military, may make some sacrifices, but not on such a large scale. The material shortages ran so deep that it even affected, at least in one small way, the Freemasons. When Dad returned from the war, he joined the fraternity. Although peacetime had returned, production had not caught up with demand, and certain things remained hard to get. In Dad's lodge and many others, it was customary to present a new brother his apron in a cellophane envelope, suitable for its protection. Cellophane, however, was in short supply, and his lodge had to use paper as a substitute. When Dad passed away, I could not find his apron. His lodge, as is the custom, supplied one at his funeral. Later, while going through some of his things, I found it in an old cedar chest inside that well-worn paper envelope. Despite its wrinkles and tears, it had protected the apron all those years. On it is a drawing of a steward knocking at the inner door on behalf of a poor, blind candidate. Along with the picture is this accompanying note. "Masonry," it says, "will understand. Our fighting men need cellophane and its ingredients. For that reason, the protection cellophane formerly gave our Masonic aprons has to be eliminated. This white paper stock will carry on for the duration. That envelope, having done its job, now hangs framed on my office wall as a reminder of those sacrifices. For the Whence Came You podcast, this is Steve Harrison with the Masonic Minute."
Well, I hope you enjoyed that wonderful segment by illustrious brother Stephen L. Harrison. If you did, please head on over to our website, wcypodcast.com, find the bookstore, click on that, and it'll take you to a page where you can click on any of the books that have been written by illustrious brother Stephen L. Harrison, and you can link those back to Amazon and pick those books up. Now, a couple of them are also available as ebooks. One of my favorite books, just because I love history and I love the mystery, is Brother Steve's Oak Island book. You know, that show is going into another season. Can you believe it? But he does a great job of taking apart that show and deciphering the myths and the facts and what we can rely on. So if you're into that, check it out. It's Freemasons at Oak Island by illustrious brother Stephen L. Harrison, but all his books are fantastic. Even if you're into the history, he did a book on Billen, just a wonderful scholar, and I can't thank brother Steve enough for all that he does. So I promised you all two pieces, maybe a third this week. So the second piece is going to come from this book. It's Pharos, the Silas Shepherd Reader. And the title of this edition was Travelers, and it's, again, the Silas H. Shepherd Research Lodge, number 1843. It's a publication, and you can learn more by going to www.silasshepherd.org. That's SilasShepherd.org. So this piece is called Sir Robert Murray, The Invisible College and the Birth of Modern Science by Todd Crone. Little did he know it at the time, but in his life, Sir Robert Murray would become a pivotal point in the operative speculative timeline of Freemasonry. He would also use the connection he made in the craft to bring together cutting-edge scientists and philosophers of the day with wealthy men who took an interest in funding their research. And by doing this, he would help create one of the most elite scientific societies the world would come to know, forever changing the scientific process, which was impeded by the religion of the day, creating a launching point for modern science as we know it today. Before we get into his achievements, I would like to shed a little light on his life to get a bit of a picture of who he was and how he came to be a Mason. There is little history of Robert Murray, and what history there is, I find only through Robert Lomas, who claims to have pieced Murray's life together through his communications and Masonic minutes. Following are a few key points in his life. Robert Murray was born in 1609 in Perthshire, son of Sir Mungo Murray, 1624, inspired by Sir George Bruce's underwater coal mine in the Firth and Forth, and became interested in engineering. 1630, educated at St. Andrew University, studied mathematics. 1633, joined the Scots Guard of Louis XIII of France as an engineer. 1641, sent back to Scotland by Cardinal Richelieu to help make trouble for Charles I, joined the Covenanters' army as a quartermaster general and marched south to take Newcastle. While he was garrisoned at Newcastle is when he became a Freemason. May 20th, 1641, Murray was made a Freemason, Lodge of Edinburgh. Whilst garrisoned at Newcastle, first known person to be made a Mason on English soil, this was witnessed by Brother General Alexander Hamilton and Brother John Mylan, the Master Mason to Charles. The 4th of December, 1642, Cardinal Richelieu dies. This was Murray's power source. January 10th, 1643, Murray took news of Richelieu's death to Charles and is knighted, so he could carry a message back to Louis XIII. He later returned to France and was promoted to colonel in the Scots Guard. 20th of November, 1643, Murray was captured while fighting in Bavaria, imprisoned in Bavaria, and left to rot. According to the Scottish Rite Ritual Monitor and Guide, page 81, Sir Robert Murray was the first known non-operative gentleman Mason, having been admitted to the Lodge of Edinburgh on May 20th, 1641. Below is a facsimile of the lodge minutes and Murray's signature, along with his Mason's mark. What significance does that have for us? For those who study the history of this gentle craft, there are two significant pivotal points in the history of Masonic research. One of them is the formation of the Grand Lodge of London in 1717. It is from this point forward that Freemasonry was no longer such a secret society, but one which now recorded minutes of their meetings and documented the attendance of their members. From this point in Masonic history moving forward, research of the craft became a lot easier. There was more documented evidence of the what's and who's to start piecing history together. I am not saying that Freemasonry became an open book at this time. There were and still are parts of the craft that are more secretive, but compared to pre-1717, it was easier to research. The other pivotal point of Masonic research is the transformation of the operative Masons of the old to the speculative gentleman Masons of the new. The documentation of Murray's initiation is the best stepping-off point that we have to begin the history of the speculative Masonry as we know it. Does that mean that there were no speculative Masons before Moray? Absolutely not. As you can see in the print above, we have Hamilton's signature on the minutes as well as Moray's. Because there was not as much written about Hamilton, we do not know if he was an operative or a speculative brother. Even in my own research, while Lomas indicates that Moray's initiation was witnessed by General Alexander Hamilton and Brother John Milan, yet another source claimed that Hamilton and Moray were initiated together. Which would mean, then, that if Hamilton was a speculative brother, that would have made him the first known speculative Mason and not Moray. But, due to the lack of written evidence, Moray gets the distinct honor. As a side note, you will see that Moray incorporated his Mason's mark into the signature. The five-pointed star as the tail end of his last name is his Mason's mark. The Mason's mark was used back then as a way to distinguish one operative Mason's work from another's. Remember, back in those days, not everyone could read or write, so each Mason had a mark that was unique to that person, to be able to identify his work. To learn more about this, one merely need join the modern-day Royal Arch Masons, and you will learn more about the Markmaster degree. Aside from being known as the first speculative Mason, thus giving us the genesis point from which we can agree is somewhat the quote-unquote birth of modern or speculative Freemasonry as we know it, Moray's next biggest contribution, in my opinion, was in the facilitation of the formation of the Royal Society. According to Lomas, Moray returns to London in 1660, after being exiled for 10 years. He founded a scientific society at Gresham College. Because of his assistance to Charles II in 1661, Charles agrees to give this new society a royal charter, making it the Royal Society. When Lomas says Moray founded this society, I would like to think of him as more of a facilitator to get the impetus of the society rolling. The Royal Society website says men were meeting at Gresham College since 1640. It is more likely they had a group of people who were educators and researchers at this college who expressed disinterest in the confines religion put on their advancement. Being accused of heresy, for example, to question whether the earth was the center of the solar system, and over time it came to a critical number of people. The time was just right for Moray to come when he did, to a lecture given by Sir Christopher Wren, also a Mason, having the backing of the king at that time, and the connections of Freemasonry to help put all the pieces of the puzzle together. Now, if you would love to read the rest of this, I would highly suggest going to their website, silasshepherd.org, and picking up the Traveler's Edition of Pharos, which I believe was the first one that they issued, published back in 2015. So check that out just as soon as you can. Now comes the point in the show where I ask you to help support this show. How do we do that? Well, we have a bunch of different ways to do that today. If you head on over to WCYpodcast.com, you can click on direct donation through PayPal, which we briefly touched on in the beginning of the program. Of course, you can make that one-time donation, or you can sign up to be a monthly contributor. Contributing $2 a month, $5, or even $10 a month, whatever you choose, really helps the program out. Of course, we have a limited edition shop where you can pick up any number of items that come direct from us. Help us out by going to MasonicRevival.com, but also we have some other affiliates that are really important. Banker's Best, one of the most unique things we've ever done, is to work with Brother Levi Banker out of St. Louis, who owns his own company called Banker's Best Beard and Skin Care. He's been so generous. If you head to WCYpodcast.com, click on More, then click on Banker's Best, and you can check out a bunch of the different products he's got. He's got a whole line of beard care products, skin care, oils, balms, all of this stuff, and he has been doing it a long time. He knows a lot about it. Everything is handmade, quality items. We even came up with the King Solomon's Reserve Beard Balm, which is a few years old now, but remains one of the great products that he still offers. Even the artwork on the bottle was done by a brother. The nice thing about this particular product is 50% of the proceeds come back to the program. If you're a history guy like me, then you'll be pleased to know that what makes the beard oil and balm very special is that it was made utilizing the fragrances specific to the exports of King Solomon's time and location, which is amazing. So black fig and honey is the formula. Luxurious scent, as Levi says, truly fit for our first grandmaster. If you use the promo code BBWCY357 at checkout, you'll also get a little bit of a percentage off. Please check that out. Banker's Best, or just head on over to buybankersbest.com. We also have a code with On It. You can go to our website, click on More, then go to On It, and you can click through any of the links here, or just go to onit.com and use the promo code WCY at checkout. You'll get 10% off, and they'll send a little bit back to the program to help us out. And of course, it's business time. The book that I wrote with John T. Ruark, it is making some real waves, and people are using it and seeing success. So check that out on Amazon. You can click right to it. You can get it on Audible, Kindle, or in print, even on iBooks. And last but not least, I want to ask you to check out the Great Books program. You'll see the banner for it on the left-hand side, Intellectual Linear Progression. Use the promo code WCY, or you can just click on that link there, and you'll actually go right to the website and hear a little bit from Scott Hambrick about how awesome the program is. So that's it. I hope you guys enjoy, and thank you so much for helping us out. And so it seems that we do have some time to read this piece, and so we'll go ahead and do that for you right now. This is a piece that was just recently published on the Midnight Freemasons, and it's called A Template for True Freemasonry, and it's by Midnight Freemason Emeritus contributor Brother Scott S. Duball. He's a past master and the current state education officer for the Grand Lodge of Illinois. Now, he doesn't mention that in the piece. He's much too humble to do that, but I felt it needed to be said. So, without further ado, A Template for True Freemasonry. In my response to one of the latest in a string of blog posts decrying Freemasonry is dying, in an attempt to garner internet traffic, I said that I am becoming exhausted with the endless complaints regarding our decrease in membership alongside a void of actual work and solutions. Quite frankly, these posts have no vision. Who are we shouting at to fix the problems? I asked. We should all know that this isn't likely to grab the attention of Grand Lodge officers who, in their defense, do not have the means to truly address the supposed problem. This problem, if you want to call it that, will be best addressed by individual Masons and individual lodges who care enough about the survival that they are willing to make programming changes to address the changing needs of the market. In saying that, it occurs to me that some lodges have figured out a template for future success, while a majority of well-meaning lodges are spinning their wheels trying to figure out what to do. You have to do more than say you want to change and expect someone else to enact it. While I was in college, the Interfraternity Council, or the IFC, hosted a speaker for all of Greek life. This speaker, in an admittedly hokey manner, brought a textbook, a sweater, and a water bottle. He said the textbook represented our ritual, the sweater with Greek letters represented our membership, or brotherhood, in our respective fraternities, and the water bottle represented the social element of our organizations. These three components make up the fraternity experience. However, the individual chapters only function when stacked in the proper order. He demonstrated that when you use a bottle as the base, the sweater and the textbook will not balance. He then showed that if you use the textbook as the foundation upon which the sweater and the bottle can rest, your organization will maintain equilibrium. Similarly, in Masonry, the ritual, the textbook, must serve as the foundation for everything else we do. It is what makes the craft. The brotherhood, the sweater, can flourish with the ritual as a unifying foundation, and only then can social activity, again the bottle, be introduced. Freemasonry has these mixed in various orders. We lead our pitch, thinking that we must show potential Masons that we have fun and we donate to charity. We might talk about how George Washington was a Mason. To establish these things, we work hard to make social activity and brotherhood a reality in our lodges. Eventually, we have brought new brothers in on the pretense of these activities alone, without properly addressing that Masonry is a body of philosophical instruction. Brothers, this is a summary of mid to late 20th century Freemasonry establishing how we arrived here today. What I find is some of the most well-meaning brothers recognize the need to bring back education while still deprioritizing it below membership by shortcutting the paths to true enlightenment through the use of a number of non-ritual-centric practices. I hear those apologists say, quote, "After all, who will we teach if we don't have any members left?" End quote. We would be better served by initiating only those who seek the true path of Masonic enlightenment, those ones who still fill our temples when the dust settles. Anything grander than this is in conflict with what the Entered Apprentice degree teaches us about our egos, buildings, membership, Grand Lodge visibility. In the decade and a half since I heard the above lecture, I have been shown its truth time and time again. I firmly believe that those lodges who have prioritized along the stated pattern, ritual, brotherhood, social, are the ones who will remain when the dust settles. In marketing terms, the unique value proposition that we offer is an initiatic experience coupled with a moral doctrine. We have the market on this product, if we position ourselves as such. My close friends and brothers know I like great dinners, but that isn't the unique product the craft provides. You don't need to be a Freemason to find a good meal. We aren't unique in our charitable giving, nor in our programs for youth. We have to lead with the unique value that only we can provide. The successful template for true Freemasonry is in the ritual. The ritual provides for spiritual growth. The ritual provides for love among brothers. The ritual provides for convivial meals. But it is essential that we discuss, treat, and run our craft in that order. If you are a lodge education officer, teach the ritual. If you're a district education officer, teach the ritual. If you are a brother who loves the craft, teach the ritual. It is on each of you. Scott Stephen Duball. Well, there you have it. I hope that gives you a call to action and fires you up for the next episode, which will be coming on January 6th, if everything goes according to plan. And if you just have to hear this one again, or you want to read it in your own voice, then head on over to midnightfreemasons.org or .com, whichever. We have both, but check it out. I wanted to make sure I told all of our contributors, our fellows, and our producers, thank you so much for all of the help and assistance this year. We could not do this show without you. We can't do this show without you guys who continually share the episodes, even if you don't contribute monetarily or anything. What really helps us out also, there's a multi-tiered approach of how we do this, and that is to share the podcast, to get it out there to new people, to give it to new brothers, and really engage them. Our generation and most of the people out there today are very interactive on the web, on Facebook, on social media. So the more we can get into those niche areas, the more we can interact with our brothers in places in where they already are interacting. Now, there is something to be said about actual lodge practices on those forms or whatever, but what we're talking about is the education, how we can help support that education for Freemasonry worldwide. And again, we just can't do it without you guys sharing and assisting via becoming contributors, fellows, or producers of the program. We can't do it without you guys sharing the links, and we can't do it without you guys being the example to set. So with that, I wish you all a wonderful holiday season, a season of light, and we'll talk to you all in January. So stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson. I'll talk to you guys next year.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.